Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Through the process of digitization, museums are making historical documents available to the public beyond institutions' four walls. And that's what the Cultural Heritage Center in Pierre is doing with the letters of Doan Robinson. He was the first secretary of the State Historical Society and the man who came up with the idea for Mount Rushmore. The South Dakota Digital Archive was launched in 2012 by the State Historical Society to provide researchers digital access to unique historical records like the letters of Doan Robinson. Joining us now to discuss the Robinson correspondence and the digital archives is Shelley Sompson. She's state archivist with the State Historical Society in Pierre. And Shelley, welcome back to the program.
Hi, nice to be here.
Also with us on the line is Matthew Reitzel. He's the Historical Society's manuscript and photo archivist. And Matthew, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, Shelley, we'll start with you. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about who Doan Robinson was.
You know, I'm probably going to pass this one off to Matthew.
Okay.
He's the one who actually really worked with the collection itself. And then when we start talking about digital records, I'll field some of those questions.
Okay, Matthew. Yeah, Doan Robinson, one of those names that sort of hear historians or historical buffs kind of know a little bit. But, you know, he was really a fascinating guy, did a lot of interesting things. I mean, you think of him as a historical, one of the first historians in South Dakota, but yet he was active when history was being made.
Both of those are correct. He, you know, whenever we have researchers come in here to the state archives, whether they have a kind of well-known piece of history they're doing research on or something that's very obscure, we always kind of stop and ask ourselves, maybe we should see what Doan had to say about this. And one of the advantages, too, of his collections is it's one of the items that have been very well gone through. There's a good index for it. There's been a good index for it since the mid-70s. So it's always been a collection that researchers have gone to for historical information. And kind of where we started with this project is we had a researcher from a graduate student from the University of Wisconsin who was doing some research, and she wanted to look through the Mount Rushmore materials on Doan Robinson. And when we brought those out for her, we kind of I looked through it and kind of said, you know, this is something, of all the collections in Doan Robinson's, you know, this is one that gets used the most, and it's something that should be made available through the digital archives. So, and once we kind of started that process, we had a volunteer who went through and did all the scanning of the actual documents themselves. In the press release we put out, there was over 3,600 different documents that we've gone through so far and on various topics throughout South Dakota's history.
How did you choose which documents, at least in the initial stages, that you wanted to include in the digital archives?
Well, we kind of went through and tried to decide, again, with the Mount Rushmore ones, which ones were being used most often or which had certain historical significance. After Mount Rushmore, the next one we did was the discovery of the Behringer Eye Plate in 1913. He was very involved with that after it was discovered. The children who found it were thinking to sell it for scrap, and the story goes there were two legislators who were over in Fort Pierre at the time, and they heard about this, and they said, you need to go talk to Doan Robinson. So they did, and he had done extensive research on the Behringer Eye, the Behringer Eye trip, and in this the discovery kind of basically they had the diaries and journals of the Behringer Eye brothers, and they didn't know any stopping points, but part of the journal said, you know, we buried this lead plate, and some people didn't think they came down this far, and some people think they went here, there, and everywhere, but discovering of the plate kind of solidified where the journey of Behringer Eye took place. And again, just showing the connections of Doan, after this was discovered, they did a press release saying, we found this, and part of his correspondence is all these different historians from surrounding states and Canada kind of saying, you know, let us know more about this. And he kind of became the main contact person for that. And then after the Behringer Eye plate, we went to the Peter Norbeck correspondence, and most of that was political in nature and also connected again to some of that Mount Rushmore. But one of the letters One of the other things Peter Norbeck is known for is for being the first person to drive an automobile out to the Black Hills. And Robinson had wrote him a letter saying, tell me a little bit more about that, or how did that work? And then Norbeck replied in September of 24 and just kind of detailed his trip. And it mentions how he went from, basically went from Pier to Rapid City, and he went in his single-cylinder Cadillac, is how he described it, in April of 1905, and he just mentions all the places they stopped along the way and how he needed help crossing the Cheyenne River, and there were three riders there who fortunately helped him out. They tied their horses to the car and pulled it across the Cheyenne River, and it's stories like that that are going to be more seen and more available now to the general public when they go and visit the South Dakota Digital Archives.
Well, Shelley Sompson, who is in making these manuscripts and correspondence, these papers available to the general public through these digital methods, is it just something that's, do you see it as for simply the general public just to have access to see these things, or do you see this as maybe something more for researchers?
Oh, I think it's a little bit of both. The Digital Archives was started, like you said, in 2012, and we've got photographs and manuscript collections, government collections, land records out there. So it's for the whole public, but it's a starting place for those who are doing serious research to, show them a little bit of what we have, and then perhaps they can come and visit here and find more. So it's a great portal. It's a way of introducing the public to collections that they might not know about.
Ultimately, is the goal to have everything in the collection digitized?
No.
No.
We have
a lot of stuff.
Right, a lot of stuff. We've got over 1 million photos. Just a huge storage area of documents and maps, and so we're digitizing as fast as we can, and but there's just no realistic way of posting everything online.
Well, Matthew, how does the process of digitizing these, in particular, as we're talking about the Doane Robinson papers, how does that process work?
Well, as I mentioned, the scanning of the documents themselves was done by a volunteer, and if that volunteer isn't here to do that, if he didn't show up when he was here doing that, it's just not something that would have been done. And really, that's kind of for this project, that was the more time-consuming part. I kind of figured it out, and he would do roughly 40 pages an hour. And he'll admit too, he read some of the stuff too, so it wasn't all working to the bone, I guess, scanning things. But so it takes time, and I think that's one of the things when you're working in the digital world, it doesn't just happen. You have to have people doing all this stuff, especially with items like these, where you have letters that are over 100 years old, and they have to be kind of taken care of carefully and done one at a time. So he went and scanned those, and then I did the actual metadata work on the digital archives, indexing things and uploading them to the digital archives that way. So it was kind of a time consuming process, and we're just kind of going at it as volunteer time allows.
Since the launch of the digital archive in 2012, has the process, has technology changed much, or are there new ways that you're doing this as time goes on?
I think for the most part, the only thing that's changed is the scanners that we've had to go through. We've run through quite a few scanners with the photo side of things, but for the most part, the content DM software we use is the same. And it's all being loaded and seen the same way. So that hasn't, I don't believe, has changed that much.
Well Matthew, what as far as the organization, are you still using the same sort of, filing system or organization charts that you use with the physical documents?
For the most part, the items that we've been putting on the digital archives of items that have already been accessioned into our collections. Within the past year and a half or so, we have been spending more time trying to create a process for how we're going to handle current and future digital collections. As time goes by here, we're slowly going to start to see more more digital items, whether they're born digital or things that have been scanned and sent to us that way. So we have kind of created a framework of how we're going to handle collections that come in the future.
Shelley Simpson, for the Historical Society and the Cultural Heritage Center, how important is this now for the mission to have the Doane Robinson papers and other documents available online and digitized for the general public?
Well, it's a very important aspect of what we do. Our mission is to collect, preserve, and make accessible. And so this is a component of part of that mission of making the collections easily accessible to the public. Prior to the digital archives, visitors would have to either come here or request that we do research for them and send them copies. And with the advent of the digital archives, we can just point them there and they can go and view, a digital surrogate of the original. So it's very important to the society.
Are people able to still order scans or have their own sort of copies through this digitization process, Shelley?
They can. On the website, if they want to, they can print off copies. They're obviously going to be a little bit lower resolution, but they can also contact our office and get higher resolution images of the photographs or of the documents.
And Matthew, for you, being involved with this, helping to make these documents available to the general public and beyond the walls of the Cultural Heritage Center, is this something that you find quite rewarding and exciting?
It can be, especially with the Robinson material, since it's something that has been used by researchers in the past, and it's made more available to them now. Instead of being physically in the building now, you can see it at home or at your own university or wherever you're doing different research. And like Shelley said, one of our goals is accessibility. So this is a good tool for us that we can make our collections available to South Dakotans and people throughout the world.
And anything in particular that's coming up next?
I think the Doane Robinson stuff is kind of still on the front burner, I guess. The digitization of photographs is an ongoing project. There's over 46,000 images available now online on the digital archives. That's the main bulk of the digital archives. So that the photo process is ongoing.
And people who are interested in checking out some of the things that have been digitized and are in the digital collection, I'm going to make sure I have this right, history.sd.gov/archives, is that correct?
Yep, that's our main website, and then there's a link there to the South Dakota Digital Archives, and you can kind of go from there.
All right. Happy exploring for those of you who are interested in finding out more about South Dakota history. Matthew, thanks so much for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
And Shelley, thanks for your time as well.